So traditionally, as long as most of us have been practicing, produced water was waste, and it was disposed of through an injection well that was permitted by the Railroad Commission of Texas. So in 2013, the legislature got together and passed a first bill, kind of codifying who was responsible for getting rid of produced water and whether they could be in trouble for taking something that may belong to the surface owner. It was then amended in 2019. So in 2013 to 2019, the economic landscape kind of shifted. And as we do in the oil patch, we find opportunity where there is none and really think about what was going on between like 14 and 19, right? We had really depressed oil prices. So as work started to deplete, people tried to commoditize other assets in the oil field and realized that produced water could be one of those assets. So it kind of began with water haulers. If you do a real investigation of who really started to monetize produced water, it was these water haulers, trucking companies. We don't even think that's how quickly the produced water landscape has changed. We don't even think of trucking salt water anymore, right? Most of that is done by pipe. And something that I will reveal to the crowd that's a piece of knowledge that I got slapped in the face with recently is that saltwater disposal lines have the power of condemnation. Anybody know that or anybody dealt with that issue? Yeah, saltwater disposal lines have the power of condemnation. So if you think of the power that a nat gas company has to move midstream product, think about the power that a saltwater disposal company may have to move this produced water product. But going back to the 14, 15, 16 time frame when water haulers began to figure out, what can I do with this besides just trucking it and turning a receipt around for someone for a disposal fee? What can I do to it? Well, they started treating it. And successfully, they began treating it and monetizing the asset, being able to turn around, put it in a pit, treat it with chemicals, and use it for drilling and completion. Operators soon followed, and then water midstream companies began to hit the landscape. Well, that raises a good question. When you have an operator, a midstream company saying, I want this asset, I want the operator to dedicate water to me, I want to take this water dedication because you'll pay me 55 cents a barrel to dispose of it, I'll treat it for 17, 18, 19 cents a barrel, and then I'll turn around and sell it as completion water for another 50, 55 cents a barrel. It's a pretty good economic move if you're in that midstream business. So it raises the question, who owns it, right? We as attorneys who represent large landowners are trying to maximize the value of our resource, our surface estate. So introduce the landowner who starts his own water company. We've seen dozens of those across Texas. We've seen the landowner that is happy collecting royalties on their produced water and their fresh water, and we've seen the landowner that has become a midstream company now. But who owns it? Is it the landowner, or is it the company producing the water tangential to oil and gas production? Well, it kind of depends on what part of the state statutes you are looking at. The Texas Water Code, Section 36 specifically, has one view, and the Texas Natural Resources Code, Section 122, which we'll have a long discussion of the potential constitutionality or not of it in just a few minutes, has another view. So what's the pure definition of groundwater in the water code? Well, it's defined as water percolating below the surface of the earth. Legislature is very clear in Section 36 of the water code. A landowner owns the groundwater below the surface of the landowner's land as real property. We saw in the Edwards Aquifer Authority versus Day case that the courts went as far to say that it was ownership in place, right? A present possessory right that is subject to a constitutional taking. But there are limitations on that. The mineral estate has the right to use groundwater to exploit their minerals. Many surface owners who don't own minerals are slapped in the face, so to speak, when they find out that an oil and gas company can drill a freshwater well to benefit the mineral estate without going and getting a freshwater ground lease from them, right? Or drill a saltwater disposal well and dispose of produced water on the lease. Now, most operators in Texas are nicer than that, and they don't want to be greeted at the gate with a shotgun and a locked gate and have to go hire someone like Marty Truss to go get a TRO to let you on the property. But they could theoretically do it, and most landowners are surprised that they can under things like Getty Oil versus Jones. So a moment ago, I mentioned that the mineral estate is dominant. We all know that in this room. One thing I think is important is to understand the nuances of the limitations on that mineral estate dominance. So you're limited by the accommodation doctrine, right? You're also limited by that non-negligent use of the surface theory. You're limited that it is an implied right to use, not own, which is a conversation I've had with many operators over the years. They say, I have the oil and gas lease, that is my surface. I kindly represent to them that it is not your surface. It is your surface to use, but you do not own it. But the surface use, unless there's pooling or other contractual provisions, must benefit the dominant estate and the dominant estate only. So this implied right to use, the oil and gas estate is the dominant estate in a sense that it has the right to use as much of the premises as is reasonably necessary. And a reminder, I can't emphasize more, it's use, not ownership, and it's limited to the leased premises. There are a few other cases that I'd suggest you look at when talking about this interplay on ownership of surface issues in the mineral estate, Getty, Lundell, Humble versus Williams.